Hope you had a great weekend, and let's get started on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by picking up where we left off last session in Deuteronomy chapter number 2. I'm going to pick up at verse number 16. Moses is making his last address to the people of Israel, and he starts it by recounting how they ended up with the extra time out of 38 and a half years of wandering in the wilderness, and how after that time out was over, and the people that were responsible for the rebellion were all dead, they began making their way up to the eastern entry point for the Promised Land. That's across from Jericho. They're actually at the plains of Moab when Moses makes this address in the 11th month, on the first day of the 11th month, in the 40th year of the Exodus. At that point, they are only 2.5 months from being into the Promised Land. And Moses is just a little over a month from being buried. And so, Deuteronomy 2, verse 16, picks up the story where Moses is describing how they're going past some of their related family nations. The first one he mentions is Edom, which is actually from Esau, which would be the brother of Israel or Jacob. And so these guys, sometimes we refer to them as brother nations because of Jacob and Esau. I kind of like it as the cousins, because everybody is kind of related because they're descendants of these two brothers. The next group that they come to would be the Moabites. The Moabites are descendants of Lot, and so these definitely are cousins, distant cousins of the Israelites, because they are descendants of the brother's son. To Abraham, Abraham's brother's son. And so the Moabites, and then next is being the Ammonites that are located, both of them on the east side of the Dead Sea and Jordan River Basin. So verse number 16, as soon as all the men of Israel, the men of war had perished and were dead from among the people, he who is said to me, today you are to cross the border of Moab at Ar. The Arnon River marks the current northern border of Moab in the time that Moses is speaking all of this. Moab actually owned all the property on this side, I think as far as the Jabbok River, which is empties into the east side of the Jordan, not quite halfway, but part of the way between the north shore of the Dead Sea and the south tip of the Sea of Galilee. But they've lost all that northern territory to the Ammonites. Amorites. So they're getting ready to cross this border. And on the right-hand side of the road now, the east-hand side of the road that they're following, that's the Ammonite territory. So just like they were warned, don't bother the Edomites, don't bother the Moabites. Now they're going to be told, don't bother the Ammonites. When you approach the territory of the people of Ammon, and by the way, Ammon Jordan is named after the Ammonites who used to live there. And so you can find that easily on a map of the Middle East. It's right on the path that we're following. Do not harass them or contend with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot for a possession. So just like God gave the Edomites their territory and gave the Moabites their territory, he's given the Ammonites their territory. And so the Israelis are not to mess with them because they're in their home territory. Little historical note, like we saw with the Moabites earlier. It is also counted as a land of the Rephaim. Now, Rephaim are counted as gigantes in the Greek language, where we get our word giant from. In my opinion, and I've shared this many times now, these Rephaim, these Nephilim, are the hybridized offspring of a genetic project carried out by fallen angels manipulating the human genome. And it was a problem before the flood, and we know it became a problem after the flood. And so here's a bunch of these troublemakers that are still left in the region in recent history. So it's also counted as a land of the Rephaim. Rephaim formerly lived there, but the Ammonites called them Zamzumim. Let me try that again. Zamzumim, or Zuzumim in other places. This is a plural form of the word for plotter, somebody who's kind of sneaky and making plans. And so these are the plotters that the Ammonites had to deal with in order to take over this territory that God had given to them. So what does it say about these guys? A people great and many and as tall as the Anakim. Now we know about the Anakim being in Canaan, right around Hebron. They are definitely among the giants, these hybrid offspring of the genetic program of the fallen angels using human genome. So the Zamzumim is another giant race. But he who is destroyed them, in large part apparently, before the Ammonites, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place. So back in history, while Israel was in Egypt, God helped the Ammonites to get rid of the vast majority of these giants in their territory. Verse 23, as for the Avarim, who lived in the villages as far as Gaza, so this is another group that was problematic in the past. And they lived all the way down to the Mediterranean coast where Gaza is. And everybody nowadays knows exactly where Gaza is. The Kaphtorim, this is the ancient name for the people coming from the island of Crete. The Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, Crete, destroyed them and settled in their place. Right around the same time that Moses was in Midian, so before the Exodus gets kicked off, there was a collapse of a northern Mediterranean civilization. It might have been brought on by some natural catastrophes, like the blowing up of Santorini, the volcano there in the Eastern Med. People began to migrate eastward out of that catastrophe. And a bunch of the people from the Crete area apparently ended up along the Gaza coast and maybe inward from there. And so that's why it's being brought up here is because we've got a lot of people that have been in the way of later settlers. And God was helping people get rid of those problematic people and take over the territory for themselves. Now, verse 24, we get back to the Moses story. Rise up now, set out on your journey, and go over the valley of the Arnon. So go past the Arnon. Behold, I have given into your hand Sihon, the Amorite king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to take possession and contend with him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you on the people who are under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish of you. So Moses is, remember, telling a story from several months earlier. The story actually starts with what we read next, and that was a message. Verse 26, so I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemot, that's in Moabite territory, or right on the edge of it, to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, let us pass through your land. I will go only by the road. I will turn aside neither to the right nor to the left. You shall sell me food for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only let me pass through your through on foot, as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in the Ar did for me, until I go over the Jordan into the land that he who is our God is giving to us. So he says, just like we tried to strike a deal with the Edomites, they ended up having to go around. And just like they struck some sort of deal with the Moabites to be allowed to go along their eastern boundary, they are now trying to strike a deal with the Ammonites, the king being Sihon, because once they get up even with the north shore of the Dead Sea, they're going to leave this north-south highway that they've been on and jump on an east-west highway that crosses at the Jordan across from Jericho. Now, from the Arnon River north to where they turn west and go down into the plains of Moab, they will be in the territory of Sihon. So the first thing that God did was have them ask for permission to pass through and make the same deal that they had offered each other time they were traveling. And by the way, they had also made connection with the Ammonites because they'd be passing on the west side of the Ammonite territory. Well, Sihon, as God already knew, was not going to let this happen. But because the Israelis have to go through here, and because the Ammonites are not related to the Abrahamic line, like the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites, this is going to be settled by fighting. Verse 30. But Sihon, the king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him, for he who is your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might give him into your hand as he is this day. Now, when Moses is making this speech, the fight is many months in the past, and the property has been turned over to three of the tribes that are going to occupy this eastern shoreline of the Jordan Valley. So, Sihon, verse 3, he who has said to me, behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land over to you, begin to take possession that you may occupy his land. Then Sihon came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Jahaz. And he who is our God gave him over to us, and we defeated him and his sons and all his people. Now, I want you to get in your mind now that the destruction of the Ammonites first the Sihon Ammonites and then later the Og Ammonites, is the first example of God's judgment on the Canaanites. The Ammonites are Canaanites, and God had said that once the sins of the Ammonites were complete, he would bring judgment on them. So that time has come now. These guys are all on God's eviction or execution list. That's the choice. Either you leave or be executed because of your sin. So God brings this to a head. So Sihon comes out, fights. Verse 33, He who is our God gave him over to us. We defeated him and his sons and all his people. And then we captured all his cities at that time and devoted to destruction every city. Men, women, children, we left no survivors. So each time that they came to one of these cities, if the people had not run away, they tried to stay and fight, then the city was attacked and the people executed and the city was burned. And that will become the procedure in the Promised Land as well, because it's full of these Canaanites that are on God's hit list, God's judgment list. And it says, only the livestock we took as spoil for ourselves with the plunder of the cities that we captured. So they took only a certain portion, a designated portion, from each of these cities that were destroyed. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon. So it's Aroer is one of the cities that's right on the Arnon River. And from the city that is in the valley as far as Gilead. Now, Gilead is the region between the Sea of Galilee on the east side of the Jordan Valley and the Yabuk River. That's Gilead right in that territory there. And so that is where Sihon had control from basically just a little bit southeast of the Sea of Galilee, a border that's defined by the Yarmouk River, all the way down to the Arnon River. All of that was being controlled by Sihon. Well, that is now all Israeli possession. There was no city too high for us. He who is our God gave all of it into our hands. Only the land of the sons of Ammon you did not draw near, that is, to all the cities on the river Yabuk and the cities of the hill country, whatever he who is our God had forbidden us. So the Ammonites actually lived on the east side of the royal road, and the Ammonites had control of the west side of that royal road. So the Israelis only take the property up to that royal road that's between the Jordan River and the royal road. That's all they touch. And so the Ammonite territory is left alone. Now, the story's not done. Verse 1 of chapter 3, then we turned and went up to the way to Bashan. We probably would be more familiar with a term for the region in the New Testament and in the modern period, Golan. It's the area north of the Yarmouk River, north and east of the Sea of Galilee, all the way up to the foothills of Mount Hermon. That's Bashan. So Og was another Amorite king who decides to attack the Israelis. And because of that, that territory is forfeited to Israeli control. They become another group of sinful Amorites or Canaanites that are on God's eviction slash execution list. So Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. Edrei is a city that's on the Yarmouk River drainage basin. But he who is said to me, do not fear him, for I have given him and all his people and his land into your hand. And you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon. So he who is our God gave into our hand Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people. And we struck them down until he had no survivor left. We took all his cities at that time. There was not a city that we did not take from him. 60 cities, the whole region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. So all these were cities fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides very many unwalled villages. We devoted them to destruction, which is a way of saying that we burned them. As we did to Sihon, the king of Heshbon, devoting to destruction every city, men, women, and children. So again, anybody that tried to stay and fight ended up being executed. And this is all because of the sinfulness of the Canaanite people that has become worse and worse until it climaxes in this period. Best way to think about this is the Canaanites have arrived pretty much at the same level that Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain had arrived at back in the time of their destruction. Verse 7, we already heard about this with the Sihon group. All the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as our plunder. So we took the land at that time out of the hand of the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan from the valley of the Arnon, that's in the south, to Mount Hermon in the north. The Sidonians call Hermon Sirion, which is interesting. It's a word that seems to mean breastplate, probably because when you looked at the slopes of Hermon on a shiny day, all of those snow valleys kind of looked like a shiny breastplate. While the Amorites called it Senir, which means snowy mountain. All the cities of the tableland and all Gilead, and all Bashan, as far as Salaka and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. So basically, as I already said, everything from the Arnon River, along the east side of the Dead Sea, the east side of the Jordan Valley, up to the Royal Road, and then past the Sea of Galilee, all the way up to the foothill of Mount Hermon. All that is now Israeli territory. Now, one last historical note, which we've already talked about this, but it is brought up because we keep talking about how giants used to really control a lot of this territory until God allowed some of the Abrahamic people to dispossess them. And so it says, for only Og, the king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaim. And does that mean he's the only one left all along the eastern side of the Jordan Dead Sea Valley? Or is it he's the only one left up in the Bashan region? And I'm not altogether certain about that. But we do know that Og himself was a Rephaim. Behold, his bed was a bed of iron. Is it not in Rabbah of the Ammonites? Now, this is going to have me make a note about the text at this point. I think that some of these little historical notes have been added since the time of Moses by Israeli scribes, who were prompted to by the Holy Spirit to put this additional explanatory material in it. We know that later in Israeli history, Rabbah, the city of Rabbah that belonged to the Ammonites, came under the control of the Israelis. And it seems as if they displayed in that city of Rabbah the captured bed of Og of Bashan. And so the people reading this later would have known about that museum piece. Now listen to how it's described. 9 cubits was its length. Now you remember, I believe at this time they are using the long cubit of 20.7 inches. And so that means that this bed was 15 and a half feet long. And actually, I have to correct myself. I was thinking about another passage instead, because it goes on and says, and 4 cubits is its breadth according to the common cubit. So my apologies. I had a little brain glitch there. So it's definitely the 18-inch cubit, which means that this bed is 12 feet long. And it is 4 cubits wide, so that is 6 feet. That's a big bed. That's bigger than a king-size bed by quite a bit. So how big was Og? Well, he must be probably 10, maybe 11 feet tall, something of that nature. And so he was a big boy, a big giant of his time period. But the Israelis took him on and beat him. And God gave all of that territory to them as, I suppose, kind of the first fruits of the Ammonite expulsion and execution that he is having them carry out on his behalf.